science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to ThinkWorks, the place where we like to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week, what I really want to talk about is the use of science and technology in the classroom setting and in education. And particularly focusing on this particular episode on the West and how it is used in science and technology and how it's proposing to use science and technology. And we'll do another episode at a later date that looks at how we can take the development of science and technology into classrooms in developing countries and poorer countries to see how we can actually start to level up the education side of things. But for this episode, I just want to talk about what we're doing here in the UK, what's happening in the States and in Europe. Now, from the UK and European perspective, there's been quite a few different policy initiatives, not all of them particularly successful, it has to be said, because of the way that they're implemented, but the ideas were good. So in the UK, the governments here are being proactive in integrating technology into education through initiatives like the EdTech Strategy, which aims to support innovation and improve digital skills among students and teachers. And in Europe, the EU's Education Action Plan focuses on enhancing digital literacy, supporting teachers and promoting high-quality digital content and tools across member states. There's also been an attempt to do some curriculum integration. So in the UK, we've got coding and computational thinking all being integrated into the curriculum from an early age, with programs like Computing at School supporting teachers then in being able to actually teach these subjects with confidence and with a good base knowledge. In Europe, there's many European countries have adopted similar approaches with a focus on STEM education and partnerships with tech companies to provide resources and training. There's also been several innovations and pilots of those innovations within some of the UK and European schools. So in the UK and Europe, schools are experimenting with artificial intelligence, virtual reality and augmented reality to create immersive learning experiences. For example, the Future Classroom Lab in Brussels showcases innovative teaching methods using technology. But there are other challenges and we need to look at those and try and work out what some of the solutions can be. So there is a growing digital divide. Both the UK and Europe face challenges related to the digital divide with efforts to ensure all students have necessary technology access, so they have access to necessary technology. And teacher training is really paramount because the technology is moving so fast. And many teachers are complaining, rightly so, that they're not being given the time to go on the proper training to actually understand how these technologies are developing, let alone how to use them effectively in the classroom, let alone how to teach them effectively in the classroom. So there is ongoing professional development needed, and we need to equip teachers in particular with the skills needed to integrate technology effectively. And within that, I also mean teaching assistants, that much maligned and forgotten group that actually do most of the hard work, particularly when it comes to students that have got difficulty in learning or have got problems with behaviour. So we need to actually make sure that the education for teaching staff incorporates teaching assistants in particular, in my opinion. Now, if we look at the US then, so we've gone through all that, in policy, in terms of policy and funding, the US has significant investments in EdTech with initiatives like the Every Student Succeeds Act, which supports technology integration. However, the approach does vary greatly between different states. And in contrast, the UK's centralized approach and the EU's Collective Action Plan provide more uniformity across the regions. In terms of curriculum and standards, the US has a strong focus on STEM education, similar to the UK and Europe, but the implementation still differs greatly due to state-level control over education. Now, on the face of it, the UK's national curriculum provides a more standardised approach to integrating technology, but the problem with the curriculum as it stands is it doesn't allow for students to explore. It really cuts down the avenues, those leafy avenues that enable students to go off and explore different aspects of what they are being taught, and instead it focuses them on a very narrow slice of what the education department believe that students need to pass a test. And I'm sorry, but the education in this country in particular is designed very much to make people pass basic exams and leave very little room for specialization and for exploration. So what we're doing is we're teaching basically students to be learning everything by rote, and that means that they're great call center scriptees, but they're not particularly good at coming up with new ideas and new ways to think and work, which is why our productivity in the UK has continually fallen, because we're not actually giving the new workforce the skills and the excitement about learning that is needed for them to bring new ideas and new thinking into the workplace. Not that a lot of big senior managers and corporations want new ideas and new ways of working, because they're quite happy to make their buck for today. And that's, again, that's a discussion for another session. But that focus has to change, and it will only change if we also then enable our students to actually have two things. One, the skills needed to continually learn and explore and give their imagination room to breathe. And secondly, impart within them a love of learning, continually improving, continually looking for ways to improve their knowledge, their skills, their experiences. And we're not doing that, and in particular in the UK. Government ministers can proclaim how many people have passed an A level at a certain level all they want, but the majority of those students leave then without any desire to ever learn again. That's how traumatic the education process is in this country. Now, in terms of innovation and adoption, the US is known for rapid adoption of new technologies and has a robust ed tech industry. However, Europe is catching up with collaborative projects and cross-border initiatives, and both regions are exploiting AI and machine learning to personalize education. But the implementation strategies may differ across different countries and different states in America and different countries in Europe. So it's difficult to try and imagine a scenario where we can harmonize all these different approaches. But we certainly need to be at least thinking in each country about how we maximize the benefits from AI, for example, whilst also mitigating against the negative effects of AI, where companies are using it to exploit algorithms that promote certain activities or certain projects or certain viewpoints and certain solutions that may not be beneficial in the end run to the student. I hope that makes sense. So all that said then, so if we look at the current state of technology in education in the Western world, in UK, in the classroom, we've got schools increasingly using digital tools such as interactive whiteboards, tablets and online learning platforms. The UK government's EdTech strategy supports the integration of these technologies to enhance learning and teaching. And while we've also improved the ability of remote teaching solutions that were developed really during the COVID-19 pandemic, which accelerated that adoption of remote learning technologies, we've got platforms like Google Classroom and Microsoft Teams, which have become integral to the education system. We've also got digital literacy going on. We've got emphasis on this digital literacy as a core part of the curriculum, which is, on the face of it, supposedly preparing students for a tech-driven future. The implementation of it, however, at the moment is a bit patchy across regions. And again, in a small country like the UK, we can't really afford that kind of patchy approach to the use and the rollout of the technology. And again, usually it's down to cost factors, and that needs to be looked at across the board really here in the UK. In Europe, EU initiatives of, like Digital Education Action Plan, they encourage member states to integrate digital technologies in education and training systems. They have cross-border projects. Projects like e-twinning promote collaboration between schools across Europe using different tools to facilitate joint educational programs and projects. Many European countries have also, like the UK, adopted digital tools in classrooms, emphasizing interaction and personalized learning experiences on the face of it, but they're only allowed to go so far within a narrow curriculum setting. They are showing students how to use the tools, but they're not necessarily letting them use the tools to explore other than the subject that is being taught in the curriculum. So going back to the UK then, and the EdTech strategy, which was launched to improve the use of technology in education, that focused on areas like reducing teacher workload, supporting inclusion for people that do learn at a different pace or have got learning difficulties in terms of taking in what's being taught, and improving student outcomes. That's the tick box. What are those outcomes? The curriculum is very narrow on what those outcomes are gauged at. But government funding is available for schools to invest in technology and training. In Europe, there's the Digital Education Action Plan that we mentioned that aims to support the development of digital skills and infrastructure across member states with specific goals set for 2027. National strategies are also then allowed within the EU countries so that they can develop their own curriculum but align them with the EU goals, which is that emphasis on digital skills and infrastructure. Now the US, which develops much of the technology that we use in our classroom and in education settings because of their big Silicon Valley investment that is, you know, hand in hand with massive corporations and government subsidies. It's basically more well known, I think, for the rapid adoption and innovation in EdTech, with a strong focus on integrating technology across all aspects of education. But it still varies, the implementation of it still varies significantly across states. So the UK's centralised approach applies for a more uniform implementation, while the EU's collaborative efforts ensure diverse but coordinated strategies across countries, something that is lacking a little bit in the states. In terms of policy and funding, the US has significant federal and state level funding for technology and education, but disparities exist between different regions. In the UK, we've got national funding, the national funding model, and the EU have funding initiatives also which aim to reduce the disparities of wealth across the regions and across countries. Now let's take a look at science and technology's integration into the curriculum. So in the UK, the computing curriculum is where it's a compulsory program for children aged 5 to 16. The UK was one of the first countries to actually roll out computing as a compulsory subject. And the curriculum includes programming, computational thinking, and digital literacy. The STEM initiatives, like programs like STEM Ambassadors and STEM Learning, provide resources and subject to schools to enhance science, technology, engineering and mathematics education. And that's what STEM stands for. I should have mentioned that earlier. Apologies. So STEM stands for science, technology, engineering and mathematics education. And they are rolling out this STEM ambassador role within colleges and trying to filter that down to schools. And the UK is also seeking partnership with tech companies like Google and Microsoft to provide schools with access to cutting-edge technology and teacher training. The problem with that approach is, of course, is that it very narrowly focuses what the computational skills being learned are, because whether the big companies and education department want to admit it or not, there becomes a bias inherent in the classroom because of the focus on the donated technologies or money that's being put into the classroom to promote science and education and engineering and computing, because obviously Microsoft are not going to want to fund a classroom that starts teaching about Ubuntu or Linux in general, or and so on. So we need to remember that we've got to try and make sure that we factor in an unbiased technological standpoint when it comes to teaching computational skills. In Europe, again, many European countries have adopted national strategies to integrate digital skills and technology into education, based, you know, following along with the EU guidelines. For example, Finland's curriculum emphasizes digital competence across all subjects, not just computer studies. The EU's Digital Education Action Plan supports member states in developing those digital skills and integrating technology into teaching and learning processes. And there's also some really innovative programs that have been developed as well, like Estonia being pioneers in digital education with initiatives like Prague Tiger, promoting programming and technology use from a very early age. Now, there are a couple of unique programs and initiatives out there as well. So for example, in the UK, we've got Code Clubs, which is a set of after-school clubs that teach children coding and computer science skills in a fun and engaging way, and Tech Hubs, which our schools are encouraged to become tech hubs, sharing resources and expertise with other schools in their areas. And we should also, it would be great if we could join up the dots then, and business department could actually then join the dots and make sure that the tech hubs of industry, for example, in Yorkshire, there is one technological hub between Sheffield and Rotherham. And it would be great if they were also involved in developing those classroom initiatives and also bringing in education at a more senior grown-up level for older students and for even adults that want to reskill. So we're not joining the dots yet, but it's a start, I suppose. In Europe, they've got the Erasmus Plus project. These projects promote cross-border collaboration, allowing students and teachers to share best practices and learn from each other. And they have the digital competence frameworks, which so these are countries like Italy and Spain have developed frameworks to guide the integration of digital skills into education, and they're shared across the EU. In the US, we've got a strong focus on STEM education, but the curriculum standards can vary significantly between states. So initiatives like CS for All, Computer Studies for All, aim to provide access to computer science education for all students, but the rollout is a little bit patchy. The UK's national curriculum, on the other hand, provides a more standardised approach, while the EU's collective efforts ensure diverse yet coordinated strategies across countries. Where the US has got a larger march on EU and the UK is how it partnerships with tech companies to provide resources and training. But again, the scale and the focus can be based on regional needs and priorities, but also where these tech giants are based can have a significant effect on which state gets the most kind of support. Also, again, when you bring in these tech giants, you do it at the cost of diverse technology footprints. So we need to somehow work out across the Western world how we can involve the tech giants, because they definitely need to be involved, but we keep an element of diversity about the technological footprint within computer science and within the use of technology like artificial intelligence and artificial augmented reality programs, particularly for people with learning difficulties, and how we make sure that we get the best solution and not just the solution that's from one of the tech giants. So now let's take a look at innovations and emerging technologies. So obviously the big one is artificial intelligence, which seems to be everywhere, but I will caution that what many applets and apps and programs are pushing as AI is nothing of the sort. Artificial intelligence is being used across the board in many fields, but the implementation is very rudimentary, and you have to watch and be careful about all the claims of, oh, this program is AI based. because the routines in it are basically just automated processes that have been always there, maybe given a little tweak, but they're not really proper artificial intelligence. Now, if you want to find out what artificial intelligence is, there's an earlier podcast episode that I did on artificial intelligence, and particularly how it's developed, and also the philosophical questions about what do we do when machines start to develop true intelligence and consciousness. And I'll put the links up in the forum post that goes with this episode once the episode is complete. But that said, AI is being used to personalize learning experiences. It provides tailored content and feedback to students, and AI-driven platforms help in identifying student strengths and weaknesses, allowing for customized learning paths. But they must be allowed to do that outside of the narrow confines of the curriculum, because learning paths need to encourage a love of learning, and at the moment that's missing. Not just in the UK, that's across the board, I think, with a lot of countries that are just focused on getting people to get qualifications, educational qualifications. So they teach within a narrow band and make them great in those bands. But then the students don't know how to really step outside of those bands to continue to learn once they leave the education system. Again, however, that said, in the UK, we've got platforms like Century Tech using AI to create these personalized learning experiences. And in Europe, they've got many different projects in different countries, but following European guidelines, that explore AI's potential in language learning and assessment in particular. Now, virtual reality and augmented reality schemes are being used to create immersive learning environments, allowing students to explore subjects like history, science, and geography in a more engaging and audiovisual way. The Virtual Reality in Education project in Denmark and the UK's use of VR in medical training, for example, are notable examples of how these technologies are enhancing education. You've also got blockchain technology. Now, Europe in particular is leading on this with the exploration for secure credentialing and record keeping in education. And the EU is funding projects to assess its potential in creating tamper-proof academic records. In the UK, we've got other pilots going on with the EdTech Demonstrator Programme. This initiative supports schools and colleges in using technology effectively, shares best practices, and explores innovative solutions. The Digital School Awards scheme in the UK also recognises schools that integrate digital technology into teaching and learning, encouraging innovation and excellence across the board, not just in computer science and mathematics. It's also across the board in all the different curriculum modules that they are doing. In Europe, you've got the Future Classroom Lab, which is located in Brussels, and this initiative showcases innovative teaching methods using technology, which serve as a model for schools across Europe. E-twinning is another scheme which encourages schools to collaborate on projects across digital tools and fosters innovation and cross-cultural learning. But within all that, you've got some potential impacts and challenges. Impacts include enhanced engagement and motivation amongst students, and improved accessibility and inclusion of students with diverse needs, and the development of critical digital skills necessary for the future workforce. On the flip side, however, you've got to make sure that you ensure equitable access to technology for all students. People in poorer regions are getting left behind, and that digital divide is growing wider. And it's not just between nations, it's within the nations themselves, within the different regions. Another challenge is making sure that you provide adequate training support for the teaching staff to integrate new technologies effectively. We also need to properly address privacy and security concerns associated with digital tools and data. Now, in the States, in terms of their innovation and adoption of technology and science, the US is the leader in ed tech innovation with a robust industry and widespread adoption of emerging technologies. However, again, implementation varies across states. And the challenges in the US are pretty similar to what we've got across Europe and the UK. Similar challenges are there. But in America, it's exacerbated by the fact that the scale and focus of solutions differs because of regional priorities and politics. So there's positive impact and there's a set of challenges, and that's across the board for whichever part of the Western world you happen to be in at the moment. As I say, I'm going to come back and we're going to talk about the developing world and the poorer regions of the world and some of the initiatives there in a future episode. I'm only concentrating on the Western side of things now because I want to get the baseline established so that when we come back to that episode, we can actually look at what initiatives can be done to level the playing field and why that is so important. But we'll talk about that in that episode. Right now, let's go back to the next part of this one, which is to discuss policy and implementation challenges. So we mentioned the digital divide. So in the UK and Europe, the digital divide remains a significant challenge, with disparities in access to technology and internet connectivity, in particular the internet connectivity. And between urban and rural areas, that gap is growing wider all the time. And it's also amongst different socioeconomic groups. Little Timmy, who goes to such and such grammar school, have got parents that can afford to buy the latest tablet or the most modern laptop and so on, and provide 24/7 super fast broadband. Little Tommy, who is from a deprived area where the traditional working class no longer exists because the industry that they serviced has been dismantled to make place for the sexier finance and computing industries in different parts of the country, their parents can't afford to buy the latest technology, the latest computer, or to keep refreshing the technology every couple of years. And their internet access may be limited to slower speeds and poorer service levels, it has to be said. So we need to take that into account. And that's across the board, not just in the UK, but across the board. Now, there are efforts to bridge that gap. So initiatives like the UK's Connect the Classroom aim to improve digital infrastructure in schools, while the EU's funding programmes support broadband access in underserved areas. Teacher training and support in the UK and Europe is also looking at how we can have effective integration of technology, but it requires ongoing professional development for teachers and TAs. I keep coming back to that. It needs to be the teaching assistants as well. Training programs are essential to equip these educators with the skills needed to use the digital tools effectively, let alone teach them effectively. There is in the UK, for example, the EdTech Demonstrator Programme, and there are various teacher training initiatives across Europe that focus on building digital competencies among educators. The curriculum integration in Europe and the UK needs to make sure that there's careful planning and alignment with educational goals within the development and the use of AI and technology. And that ensures that digital tools enhance rather than distract from learning. And that has got to be a key consideration. Policy support, we need to make sure that the education action plan and the frameworks that go along with those integrate technology into teaching and learning, but also that we link into the business, technology and science hubs across the UK and Europe. And we make sure that we get those guys involved in a fair and equitable way. Now, the UK and Europe have policies that try to address some of these challenges. So the governments in the UK and Europe, they try to allocate funding to support technological adoption in school, providing resources for infrastructure, devices and training. But money at the moment is tight because of all the different issues that have been going on with the war, COVID and mismanagement, it has to be said, by various governments, particularly in the UK. And it doesn't matter what flavour government you look at the moment. For the last 20 years, there's been some serious mismanagement of our economy here in the UK, and in particular of taking money out without really putting the investment back in. When times were good and now times are bad, that money simply isn't there. So we've got to recover from that, and then next time things start to be become good and viable, we need to make sure that we allocate money and put money to one side for another rainy day. It's what they encourage families to do, and it's just unbelievable that governments and corporations don't do the same. Now, if we look at the US context in all this, the US has significant federal and state level funding for technology and education, but the approach does vary differently and widely between states. Programs like E-Rate help schools access affordable internet, whereas the UK's more centralized approach and the EU's collective action plan provide more uniformity across regions. It's not perfect, but it's slightly more even than what's being rolled out in the States. Both the US and Europe recognize the importance of teacher training and technology integration, but the scale and focus of training programs once again differs in the US down to regional needs and priorities. And the digital divide is a common challenge across all regions in the States, with efforts to ensure equitable access to technology for all students. But the scale of the issue and the solutions may vary, because America is just, I mean, America is huge. And making sure that they've got a uniform rollout of technology across education, it's just the mind boggles about how that could even be done across some of the states that are bigger than the UK. So how can you? I have no answers for our American cousins, but they need to kind of do a EU model in some ways, where there's a set. These are the minimum requirements that are set by the federal government, and then the state legislation and funding has to. They can be original in how it rolls it out, but it still has to deliver these base outcomes. And I don't think that's particularly going on at the moment in the US from what I've heard. I could be wrong. If I am, if one of my American cousins can let me know, and I will correct that in a later episode. But right now, going back to this episode, we need to start to bring everything to an end. I think in terms of the way we're going with education and the way that technology is developing, AI is definitely going to become much more prevalent in both the way that teachers and students use technology, do research in particular, mark and administer, the way that schools administer their funds and manage their staff will become much more AI driven. And students' marking may also be handed over to AI programs to allow teaching staff more time to prepare and to train. So all these are good things, but there could be an over-reliance on AI, which actually is a detrimental, which has a detrimental effect, because it stops teachers from teaching and learning the subjects in a deep level. But it also stops students from learning how to research properly, how to really learn in depth what they are being tasked to do. So there's all kinds of different pros and cons going around with this, but there's no doubt that AI can revolutionize education. We've just got to keep our eye on the ball and make sure it revolutionizes education for all the right reasons and in all the right ways. We also need to look at how we can harmonize the rollout of technology across disparate kinds of regions, you know, the more affluent and the more deprived. We need to bring the deprived areas up to the level of investment in technology and science in particular, and in education, as the more affluent levels, and that's across the UK, America, Australia, the rest of the European nations, and so on. It all needs to be looked at in proper detail with some proper actionable plans that don't get chopped and changed every time there's a change in government. It needs to be a cross-party approach that says this is how we're going to invest in education, and in particular in science and technology. But it needs to be done in a way that looks at all the regions within each government's control, or each state's legislation control, and so on. And there definitely needs to be more collaboration among states. And by states, I mean countries, not just the US, but there needs to be more collaboration across countries about the actual topic of AI in particular, and how that can be used in education, and how we can use augmented reality to help people in particular with learning difficulties, and how we can keep them engaged with the subject and learning through these technologies so that they don't get left behind. And that's my great fear in all this, that the technology is great and it's shiny and it's sexy and we can do this with it, we can do that with it. There's got all these different apps that we can use, but we need to roll it out in such a way that it's a difficult balancing act, because we don't want to hold the students that want to embrace the technology and go racing ahead. We don't want to hold them back, but at the same time, we don't want to leave the people with a slower learning process or with particular difficulties. We don't want to leave them behind, and we need to make sure that we have almost like a two-tier curriculum in many ways that encourage and enable the people that want to go ahead at a pace to be able to do that. But we also need to put more focus, I think, into those that are being left behind, so that they can at least have the education that they need to succeed in later life. Now, as I said, we're going to come back at some point and do an episode on the initiatives that are going on in the poorer nations around the world and in the developing nations, as they're sometimes kindly called by the West, the more affluent West. But there's also countries in the West that have got issues that we need to look at. So we'll take a look at how things are being rolled out in these countries and what initiatives should be developed or are being developed or even in the process of being delivered that could help these countries narrow the gap between the haves and the have-nots when it comes to technology. But that's then. For right now, as always, there is a corresponding post for this episode in the forum. So if you go to darreninfoam.com/thinkworksforum, you'll find that there's a post for this episode. Come and comment on what initiatives you think we should be looking at and developing for poorer regions in particular, or any technology aspects that are going on or scientific developments that are going on at the moment that we need to be considering. Now, I just want to leave you with one last aspect of this. So, as an anecdote, a few years ago, we talk about the national curriculum and how it narrows the focus and it leaves a lot of people behind in terms of they just get fed up with learning. A few years ago, I was asked to stand in at a unit that was teaching children, teenagers, troubled teenagers, shall we say, and teenagers that were not wanted by the other schools in the area because they were too disruptive. And I was just asked to stand in while the teacher that was employed could move across for 4 weeks. So I had to stand in for 4 weeks. And I was given the lesson plans and the curriculum and everything else, and this is what we had to deliver. Now, what I was finding was that these lesson plans that in a normal classroom would do in one lesson was taking 3 or 4 attempts, and it was exhausting. I had students setting fire in the classroom. I had them bringing loads of toilet rolls in from the toilet and throwing them out the window on the second floor, and all kinds of disruption and everything. And it was difficult to get the lesson plans across. In my last week, and I always said that I wish that I'd been allowed to develop my own lesson plans, but because I was a stand-in, I wasn't allowed to do that. But anyway, last week I went in and I had a particular group. And as I walked into the classroom, they were really excited, and it was just, "Sir, sir, sir." And they never called me sir up to that point, believe me. And I was like, "Yeah, what's going on, guys?" And they went, "Is it true that you're an alien hunter?" And my brain just fried for a moment. I was like, "What, eh?" And then I said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Well, basically, earlier that week, I'd done a talk using, it's called This Island Earth. And it was basically the idea of how we can look for life in other worlds and what conditions need to exist And as a bit of fun, I also talked about some of the alien conspiracy theories that were going around. And I did a little bit of a fun piece about Area 51. Again, go and check the podcast episode that I did a few episodes back now about Area 51 and my beliefs about that area, and also on alien conspiracy theories in general. But, as I say, one of the kids that had been in the audience used to go to that unit, and he'd come in to see his brother, to drop his brother off, and he was chatting, and he said, "Oh yeah," he said, that Darren Smithson guy, he does this fantastic talk, and basically, the Chinese whispers of it had gone from, just denigrating alien conspiracy theories into being an alien hunter. So they were really excited, and coincidentally, at the time, a news item had just broke in the British newspapers about a footage that had been taken of an alien in Mexico. And it was across the tabloid press. Anyway, and I think one of the papers even had it on the front page, but that's by the by. So, there I was, and I said, "Okay," I said, "I'll tell you what, guys, what we'll do is, I've got a lesson plan here. If we can get that done, we've got an hour and a half. If we can get that done in an hour, I'll spend the last 30 minutes and I'll give you the highlights of what we talked about, and we'll also discuss this so-called alien discovery and explain what I think about it and why." And they literally did that lesson plan in 45 minutes. Now, this is, bearing in mind, it had taken 3 or 4 lessons for other lesson plans for them to do it. And they did this one in 45 minutes, giving me 45 minutes to set up all the science and technology and get my... Luckily, I always took my laptop with me to get information off. So I plugged my laptop into the AV suite in the classroom, brought up my presentation, and just did a quick summary on some of the main issues that we discussed within it. And obviously, I said, "Okay, guys, so let me read this out to you." So I got this tabloid piece, and I said, "A filmmaker in Mexico just happens to stumble across an alien and takes footage of it whilst he's making a film. Now then, can anyone tell me what might be the reason why this has happened, why this coincidence has suddenly occurred?" And they engaged, and they asked questions, and they formulated propositions, and they got the answer. And they said, "What type of film is he making, this director?" That was the key question. And I said, "He's making a science fiction movie." And everyone went, "Oh, it's publicity." And it was just, I tell you, it was fantastic. I went through the main points in my This Island Earth presentation very quickly. They asked questions throughout. They didn't disrupt. They weren't shouting over one another. They weren't, interrupting me. They were putting their hands up and waiting for me to say, "Okay, what's your question about the piece that I just done?" It was amazing. And this is why we need to rethink about how we focus narrowly on certain subjects that we are teaching within curricula. I'm not saying that we shouldn't get the basics absolutely focused on and done, but we need to encourage a leafy suburb approach as well, where there's time in the school day for students to go and explore, in a learning context, different subjects or different subtopics of the main topic that's being taught in a lesson. And we're not doing that. And I think that is to the detriment of the future learning potential of many, many students who, as I say, unfortunately, a lot of them leave school scarred for life and decide that they're never going to do any kind of training or teach or learning ever again, and that's it. And we need to change that, because that is the only way that the Western world, and in particular the UK, can start to regain its productivity levels, if you want to narrowly measure the success of a country by its productivity. But regardless of how you do it, if you encourage a student to want to learn, and they keep that love of learning when they leave the education marketplace, surely that has got to be of benefit to the wider country. whether it's the economy, whether it's businesses, whether it's in the public sector, it doesn't matter. If you've got people who want to learn, who want to explore, who want to look at new ways of doing things, that has got to be of benefit across the board. And it just amazes me how governments and corporations in particular don't understand that they need to allow their workforce and their students the room to think, to plan, to develop. I just think it's critical that they do that, and I don't think we're going to improve anything greatly until governments and corporations and management teams take that on board. Hope you found that interesting. As I said, come and join me in the forum. Take care, everyone. It's a crazy world out there and getting crazier every day. I have no idea what I'm going to be doing next week. I don't usually plan it until a couple of days after I've got this particular episode or that particular episode in the bag. But come and join me anyway every Monday from 9 o'clock in my website, darreninform.com/thinkworks, and or in various podcast platforms like Spotify and Amazon Music and Apple Music and about 20 others at the moment, podcast platforms that are promoting or hosting my show. We've got some more guests coming up soon as well. I'm in the process of organizing some American guests that have approached me wanting to do discussions, some of which are directly relevant to the episode we've just done. So we've got all kinds of things coming up, but come and join me next week. In the meantime, take care, and I'll see you all soon.
Would like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for at Darren Inform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to Think Works, the podcast for thinkers.